Like, I'm a tomato. Angie's
Crouton.
crouton.
Welcome to the Christ United Quarantine Podcast, the show where we get advice, guidance, and inspiration to help us make it through this, just one day at a time. I'm your host, Ashley Danner, Digital Content Manager here at the church, and a lifelong student who's just doing her best to not share all of my midnight opinions on Facebook. In today's conversation, I get to sit down digitally with Angie Rozowski and Lisa Riazzi, two of the most fun and all-around best ladies to be around at Christ United. And I'm so excited to have their combined positive energies with me today as we chat about how to be Christ-like neighbors and friends to those we disagree with in these crazy divisive times. We hope that this discussion will give us all some inspiration and encouragement as we navigate our new normal. Lisa, Angie, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Hello.
So I am really excited to talk to you guys, even though I know this is going to be a tough conversation because you two in particular have never met a stranger. Both of you have so many friends all over the place in all different walks of life. And I know that I'm going to be the first one to say that I don't have all the answers, but I feel like we're all in this same situation right now, right? Where we have at least a little bit of friction happening with either family or friends or loved ones who we are disagreeing with on one thing or another. It's all over social media. I don't know. Do y'all experience this? I don't know.
For sure. And being quarantined for the past few months has just made it more intense. All of the things we were already feeling, we have more time to read about and research and fight about. You know, we used to be so busy, and now we've got all this time to argue.
It's true. And everyone has a different opinion about how they want to handle their own quarantine and how everyone else should handle it. And it's tense and anxiety ridden.
Mm-hmm. Has there been a moment or a particular discussion that comes to mind with somebody that you feel like highlights this tension?
Yeah, I mean, for sure right now, you know, people really want to make everything so political, and that's what's so hard. Is everything mm-hmm. becomes political. And this is such a staticky time for the country, just politically, right? It's so, everything's so divisive and everyone is so black and white right now. Mm-hmm. And so even when it comes to like face masks and having backyard parties or birthday parties or funerals or weddings, everyone has a stinking opinion, but really just, if you can be comfortable with what your decision is, everybody will fall in line. If they feel the way you feel, they'll show up. If they don't feel the way you feel, hopefully they don't show up. Like, they can be nice about it. You mm-hmm. know, like, that's the worst part mm-hmm. is if I want to go to a backyard party and share drinks with people, it's really nobody's business because they can choose to distance themselves from me after that.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. What about you, Angie?
Yes, I can think of one example. My husband, Paul, and I were in a Zoom meeting with some friends, and the discussion got a little charged because there was one person that we didn't realize in the group that was very much not sure if the virus was real, thought that we were going overboard with the shutting things down. And I found myself getting angry and ready to pounce. But I have to give credit to my husband, Paul, that was just, he listened and he was curious of why she felt this way and asked her a few questions and then politely disagreed with her and really diffused the situation, where I probably would have charged it up more. So So, and that just happened not very long ago, just a few weeks ago. So yeah, there's one example for you.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure people have had that same conversation in their own lives.
For sure.
Or at least something very like it. And I know that I've shared that pounce feeling, with you, Angie. And I just, you know, it's hard to not want to feel like you have to like, no, you have to understand. No, you have to understand. Yeah. especially in situations like this, where I think everybody feels like everybody's like safety in one form or way is involved. So it feels like a very righteous, stance, yeah. Regardless of, you know, I'm sure that woman feels that her stance is righteous. And I'm sure that y'all feel like, no, that we need you to understand so that you don't get hurt. You know, everybody feels like very sure right now. Are there any conversations that y'all have had throughout this period of time? I mean, and life, I'm sure. Like, this is not just a quarantine problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
Being able to discuss things and respect people and have Christ-like relationships is a lifelong struggle. But has there been any moments or stories where you've done something that you wish that you had done differently?
Ooh. For sure. I think I probably realized that the way I used to react to big political hot button issues, by wanting to change someone's mind or convince them that the way I felt was the best way to feel. I think I have fine-tuned my reaction based on the way I used to be. So I went from really wanting to beat people over the head until they understood where I came from. 'Cause you just want to be heard is all. And, you know, you just want people to believe the right way, because for me, it was right and wrong, you know? So I think, I love the Paul approach. That's kind of where I tend to go now, is I ask lots of questions and then I want to be heard also.
Mm-hmm.
But for sure, these days when I can feel kind of a bubble, when I feel that bubble up inside where I want to get kind of cranky, I just think, okay, well, this person feels this way for a reason. And maybe that reason is so simple as that's the way my parents raised me. And
absolutely.
I don't think that's a great reason for feeling anything. I think you should have your own opinions and values. But if even it is that simple, that's just the way I was raised, I can accept that they don't even want to dive deeper than that. Maybe they're scared, you know, of changing their mind or making their families angry. We all know what that's like, right? We don't all agree with our families on everything.
No, not at all.
No, I mean, we're coming off Memorial Day weekend here, folks. And I know that at least for me, we spent some time distanced with friends and spending time with family that we're able to be with. And I mean, it always ends up being something. And not necessarily an explosion, which I'm sure that in my younger years, I was a part of many explosions. But this year in particular, you know, I just went to go get something out of the back fridge.
Oh, no.
instead of having the conversation, you know what I mean?
Yeah, there you go.
When people are standing around the television, usually I shouldn't be there. is what I've learned.
Yeah. That's the same news stations. Yes.
Yeah. Right.
It's come to the point for me and my family where I choose not to bring it up.
Bring
up a certain topic that I know will be difficult and the conversations will end up disagreeing. So sometimes it's just a matter of choosing to keep quiet.
So let's talk about the questions that I asked a lot of people this week. And it was really a fun experiment. I almost would suggest that my listeners try this, because man, was it interesting. I just picked 15 people in my phone and I specifically chose people who were from all walks of life. friends who I know think differently than me, family that I know thinks differently than me. I asked pastors, coworkers, and I just asked them two questions. And I have the benefit of, you know, running a podcast. So I get to say, I'm running a podcast. I want some feedback. But the two questions that I asked were simple. And it also helped me understand that this conversation is a much bigger conversation than I understood when I started writing the simple little script for this show. Mm-hmm. The first question was, why do you think it's important to be friends with those whom you disagree with? And then the second question was, how do you manage relationships with people you routinely disagree with while striving to live up to Christ's call to be a good neighbor? And I think that everyone I talked to was a Christian. So I'll give that caveat. They were all the same in that way. And I got some really interesting answers and even some stories that people shared with me that were really encouraging, just in the sense that I think everyone's having the same dinner table conversations, the same Facebook woes, the same surprised feelings when someone they love thinks something that they disagree with. You know, it was very universal. So before we get into those answers, I'd like to know, how would y'all answer those two questions?
I would say, in answer to your first question, which was, what are the three reasons it's important to be in relationship with people you disagree with? Mm-hmm. One is it makes for an interesting perspective that perhaps you haven't thought of. And it may, or I guess, it may bolster your own opinion. Mm-hmm. And if you're a super healthy person, maybe you'll even start considering changing your mind. Mm-hmm. Another reason is agreeing to disagree in a mature way, especially mm-hmm. if it's someone you're going to be around a lot, late, you know, family member, coworker. It's a great way to reach solutions and come up with best practices, I guess. Mm-hmm. Those are a couple of reasons, Lisa.
That's good. Yeah, for the first question for me, you know, it's almost like this analogy. I send my kids to a diverse middle school when most people transfer them out, because I don't want my kids to have the same religion. I don't want them to look like everyone. I don't want them to eat what everybody eats. I don't want them to talk the way everybody talks. I don't want them to feel the way everybody feels. But I want them in the homes of those other people learning the way those kids are being raised and where they come from. So I love that people are different. And I do surround myself, most of my very best friends feel the opposite of me on really, really big, like, relationship breaking things. Like my boyfriend is like the opposite of me in a lot of things, but we have these conversations and I love to hear the way other people feel. It doesn't mean I'm going to change my mind, but certainly once you understand why someone feels the way they do, it makes it easier to hear it, you know? But I love, mm-hmm. you know, this, it's like we're this mixed salad. We're not a soup. If we were like a soup, we would all be taking on the characteristics of each other. But we're like a salad. We can coexist, right? Mm-hmm. Like I'm a tomato. Angie's a crouton. Yes.
I love that.
Seasoned.
Yeah. And complements each other. You know, and there's all types of salads as well. There's fruit salads, there's veggie salads, there's Jell-O salads. There's lots of different salads in the world where we can all be really different and coexist. I will admit I do love a good Jell-O salad. I was brought up to like Jell-O salad.
Yuck.
We call it fluff.
Fluff.
Yeah, it's got whipped cream and that's mandarin great. Oranges
I love it.
And Jell-O and cottage cheese.
That's yum. That's what in the Midwest. Yeah, we call that.
We're both from the Midwest.
Either church food or funeral food or old lady food. Wherever those things are happening, you got Jell-O. I mean, yeah, Jell-O salads.
Mm-hmm.
That's the good stuff, girls.
So, for the second question, how do y'all regulate and manage and maintain relationships that when you disagree? Is there something in particular that you like, how you treat those relationships, other than avoiding tough conversations? Because I feel like everybody does that to some extent. But what are some ways that you found have made those more vibrant relationships?
Well, I am number one of avoiding conflict. That is something in my personality trait or something. But there was one instance that a colleague, I could tell I upset her. And I couldn't handle it. I had to go right to her face to face. I followed her to her office, shut the door behind me, and said, "All right, let's talk about this. I'm really sorry." And I just apologized and talked about it right away so that we could resolve it and continue working together. And that seemed to be a good solution. There were some tears, and we left laughing. Mm-hmm. That was a good situation.
Mm-hmm. Nailed it. For me, I can have tough conversations with a handful of people pretty regularly, knowing that we don't agree on much of it, but it's okay to bring it up. And, you know, especially after, you know, it's late at night and you're tired and who really cares, let's just get after it. Mm-hmm. For me, it's become nice to have those conversations, because as things evolve and things change, that's the one thing I can like count on. Mm-hmm. is having a polite debate. Everybody's being heard. And it's like, at the end of the day, for me, what's way more important is surrounding myself with people I love, regardless of how they feel. I may not think they are the smartest in the moment. You know, I may in my head being like, "Wow, that's really stupid that you feel that way." But it's almost like I've done a lot of therapy, and it's everything you learn in therapy, regardless of what you were in therapy for, can be used for anything, you know? So it's like, if you're in therapy for childhood trauma or a marriage or parenting, it's all basically the same thing. So how you communicate, you know, you say, "Okay, but when you talk to me like that, it makes me feel small or belittled or unheard." And that's not just for a marriage, right? It's not just for your parents. That's like, you can say that, and that formula works in every situation. So if you're having the debate about, you know, guns or whatever, it's okay to just say, "Wow, but when you talk to me like that, it makes me feel really insignificant. And the way, here's why I feel the way I feel," right? So there's a way to do the PAW. Basically, we're going to call it the PAW.
The PAW.
Where you diffuse it, you ask questions, you get people talking about themselves, because that's what they know best, right? They're experts of themselves. Mm-hmm. And then they're maybe more willing to hear your side.
We went to the same counselor, because my counselor taught me that same formula of, I remember this, I put it in my notes on my phone. It's when you say this to whoever you're dealing with, is when I observe blank, I think blank, I feel blank, and I would prefer XYZ. I remember that formula perfectly. But I also want to add one other thing. My good friend Ronnie Thompson, who's a spiritual director, and she has a lot of wise words, so I know she won't mind me quoting her, but she talks about dealing with difficult people of pausing and going up before you go out, meaning going up to God and asking for his advice or his guidance in the situation before you speak out at the person you're dealing with. And I have thought of, she doesn't know this, she told me this years ago, and I have thought of that many times throughout my life when dealing with people, of going up first before going out.
I love that. And in compliment to exactly what y'all are saying, I got lots of great answers, but a lot of them echoed a lot of the things that you're saying. One of the ones that I really loved for the first question, why be in relationship, you know, with people you know you disagree with? One of them was to make sure that I'm not off track. Mm-hmm. You know, in a perfect world where you have an open dialogue with your friends and family that's safe, it helps you remember when you've gone extreme or silent or have forgotten to listen. And, you know, often that's called an echo chamber. You know, yeah. when you're surrounded by your own ideas, which is so easy to do now because, you know, social media does a great job of showing you what you want to see.
Mm-hmm.
And the internet does a great job of showing you what you want to see. And lots of people make money off of showing you articles and information of mm-hmm. things that you want to see.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really easy to feel really vindicated in every single thing that you feel and think and believe. Mm-hmm. And so remembering to share space with people who push back on those values, even. Because like you said, it's Lisa, it's sometimes you come away feeling even more staunch in what you think, like going, oh, nope, I hear that, but I think that just more strongly makes me believe what I believe, which was actually something that that my sister's response was, yeah, I mean, going through the process of explaining why I believe what I believe, either, you know, in my opinion would fact check you. And for her, she says it makes her feel more secure in what she thinks,
mm-hmm.
yeah, explaining it.
Bolsters your mm-hmm. own opinion, right?
Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that I heard back from one of my friends that I absolutely loved was that she feels that it makes her life more holy. And mm-hmm. I loved this idea. She was like, creation is diverse. You know, the world that God created is huge. So if my friend group doesn't look like that, then maybe it could be more holy. Oof. Which I just thought was sweet and, you know, really, really uplifted me.
Was that one of your pastor friends?
It was not, but she's not a pastor yet. She does go to seminary at Bright. Mm. But she works for PT, North Central Texas. She helps kids learn to read. So she's holy in and of herself. Some of the things that I got back to the second question were really wonderful as well. One of the things that Stephanie said is that we often disagree with people who are close to us, you know, often because, and the way I interpret that is because you feel safer having more detailed, hard conversations with people you love, right? Mm-hmm. 'Cause you feel like that connection's stronger. Like it's not as easy to break, but sometimes you do feel like it could harm that relationship. And it's important to still cherish that relationship for all the reasons that you cherish it outside the disagreement. And something she said that I often forget, so I wanted to share it with y'all, was sometimes loving people and being in relationship with people that you disagree with looks like avoiding certain topics. But mostly it's recognizing that they're human beings worthy of love regardless of your opinion. And that their opinion absolutely doesn't define their worth, which I needed the reminder of.
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy when I'm scrolling through something to roll a whole group of people into a subcategory
mm-hmm.
and go, you cannot contribute here because mm-hmm. everything about everything you're saying is opposite of what I think. Really easy for me to folder people, you know, like on a desktop. And then it was fun to hear back from Chad too. He had some really practical ways. He and I's family sound really similar. Mm-hmm. I got to chat with him a lot and we share love by sharing debate, which is a sport, you know, in our families. And he was saying that one of the ways that he, really works through tough conversations or conversations in which he disagrees is that he puts himself in the posture of a student, which we're going to talk about. You know, I want to leave us with some actual ways that we, like some tools that we can go forward from here with. And I want to hear what y'all's tools would be too. But his was posture of a student. Like a lot like what you said, Lisa, where you actually listen instead of thinking about the next thing to say and ask questions. And one of the interesting things that he said was, I ask questions not just so that I can learn answers, but to remind them how they got to how they think.
That's good.
That's very mature.
Yeah, very. And he said that he often, just like you said, in how you phrase something with I feel statements, he also talked about using feeling statements, but also explainer statements, such as, here is how I came to believe what I believe. Because not only does that indicate I've thought about this, so I probably have a position, but also asks the question of the other person, how did you get to where you are mm-hmm. on this topic? Which I'll tell you, just from talking to family members, not everybody or friends, not everybody knows why they think what they think. They just know that they think it. Mm-hmm. And so the value in those conversations is figuring out how you both got there, just like you were saying, Lisa. But yeah, I mean, I got so many shockingly similar answers, which I just think is great and can, you know, which I'm sure that, you know, I think very highly of my friends and network. But mm-hmm. I also think that lots of people get it, mm-hmm. which is so funny because, you know, we seem to have such a hard time talking about things, but it seems like everybody gets it. Yeah. At least ideologically.
Yeah, sometimes I think we all want the same thing. You know, mm-hmm. we want support and love and good things to happen. It's just how you go about getting it is where the disagreements happen. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So why don't we talk about some ways that y'all get your feelings across that works when you disagree? We've talked about a few things and what other people think. You know, we all love Brené Brown here in the small circle. And courage over comfort, right? And mm-hmm. she has a lot to say about why you do share the things that you think and the things that you stand firm on, the things that you feel like you need to share. You know, I in my life strive to be a good advocate and a good ally. And part of that is not always avoiding conversations. Are there ways that you are able to share those strong opinions that work when you feel like the other person is in direct disagreement? I mean, usually those conversations come up because you feel like you need to direct or correct. Mm-hmm. How does that work for y'all?
I think if someone can hear my why, that's really powerful. And like even something so big, so hairy, and so crunchy, we shouldn't talk about it, but we're doing it, guys. We're going to guns. when I get into a sweet battle about weapons, you know, it's always the same arguments on both sides. But when people understand why I feel the way I feel, like I grew up in a home with abuse and there were weapons everywhere. On the refrigerator, in the garage, under the beds, in the cabinets, just loaded weapons, right? When someone who is a big gun advocate hears that I grew up in fear because those guns were so readily close by when there were angry, drunk people close, I think a person, generally, I've never had anybody roll their eyes, right? They're always like, holy cow, I get that now. Like, of course you hate them, right? Because they were used to terrorize me, you know? So, but also when I'm talking to someone and they have a reason, right? Maybe they grew up in the country and it was their granddad's Civil War gun. You know, like I get all of the reasons and the logic behind it. I get it 100%. It doesn't mean I have to buy into it and agree and want guns all over my house, but certainly I understand why people feel the way they feel. Mm-hmm. But I love when I hear a why that makes sense to me, other than mm-hmm. it's my right or something like that. Some people have a really great why. I mean, I've got people in my family, big gun advocates, who own Civil War weapons from family members, right? And those weapons have stories, and those weapons saved that individual's life so they could come back, right? And like a Vietnam mm-hmm. weapon that came back. So I understand why they want to display those, because there are family members that wouldn't even be alive if it weren't for that weapon, right? Mm-hmm. That literally saved them. So I love a why. I love a good why, because mm-hmm. you suddenly understand that there's a reason for someone feeling the way they feel, other than I just like it, or mm-hmm. that's how my daddy felt, right? Okay, well, you know, I love a good free will story, right? Like, you know, use your free will. You've been given this gift of not being a sheep all of the time, to use your mind and make your own decisions. Do that. I love that. I respect it.
Mm-hmm. Nailed it. Mm-hmm. Well, I would say too, if you can find one small aspect of what you're talking about that you agree on, to find that place to start with, okay, we can agree that we both want a solid education for our children, you know, or something mm-hmm. like that. It's just the mm-hmm. way in which we go about getting our children educated that we disagree with. Also, I tend to put a competition on everything. Everything is winning or losing. I'm winning or I'm losing. And I have to tell myself constantly, this is not a competition. This is not a win or lose conversation. Because we both lose if it goes south.
Right.
So those are a few things. Besides, my favorite technique is to throw some humor at it and lighten the situation. Mm-hmm. You know, that is probably my favorite way to deal with hard issues.
Yeah.
That are getting heated.
I'll toss myself in that ring too.
I just can't imagine either of you being funny. This is a hard concept for me.
It's shocking, I know.
That's and hilarious. If it's inappropriate,
that's even better.
Better.
Oh my gosh. Well, so I think those are great, great perspectives. I think the why is so important. I think that finding the common ground is so important. And I think that finding it can sometimes be hard, but it's always there. There's never been a situation where there isn't something there for me. Mm-hmm. Even with people that I truly feel like I need to walk out and not see again, you know, mm-hmm. there's always something there. So let's talk about some tools that all of us can use as we navigate our current environment. You know, like we want to be in relationship with our neighbors, and we want to be in relationship with our friends and our family. And we are, and lots of people are succeeding at those. But if there is a situation where you want to apply some stuff to maybe get through a tough conversation, or even just have really good conversations, like I feel like relationships deepen, you know, regardless of conflict or not, through really good conversation. And so we've got four things today to close up with. And as we go through them, ladies, I want you to talk to me about how valid you think these are, if you've used them, or if you've never heard about it before at all. Number one, active listening versus passive listening. So this is a real deal thing. You can Google it. There's some really fun, like pictures of them as well that describe different methods for active listening versus passive listening. But what Chad described as his student posture is a great example of active listening. There are six key active listening skills. Number one is paying attention, right? This seems easy, but I feel like we all tune out when we're hearing the same argument that we've disagreed with over and over and over again. Sure. It's easy to want to skip to the next part. So while paying attention, number two is withholding judgment. So this is really hard, but it's also, we in our last episode talked about the Enneagram, and I know both of you ladies know the Enneagram too. And one of the things that Suzanne Stabile says is so important to understanding yourself and understanding others is non-judgmental self-observation to finding your number. And just like we use that with ourselves to try to not judge ourselves as we learn more about our strengths and our weaknesses, we have to use that with other people too, right? So we have to try to use non-judgmental observation when we're trying to have really good conversations. And then after we've paid attention and we are withholding judgment while listening, we're reflecting, you know, we're measuring those things up against the things that we think. We're trying to figure out if we've thought that exact way before. And then once we're reflecting, just like you said earlier, Lisa, then number four, we're going to clarify. Nothing makes somebody feel like they're being listened to well than if you ask a question about something in particular they said. Rather than just having the next answer to their query or a question that goes another direction, asking someone, so you said blank, what do you mean by that?
Mm-hmm.
Or you used a word I don't fully understand when you were talking about blank. Can you tell me what that means real quick? And then just like y'all were talking about with counseling, and I am married to a counselor in training. So we use a lot of this where, and we talked about it in our marriage podcast with Chris, that one of the things that you do after you've listened thoroughly without judgment and reflecting and asking questions to clarify is you summarize what the person has said.
Mm-hmm.
You say, so what I'm hearing you say is that you feel blank because you have heard it from blank. And so you think that that means blank. And you don't have to say it in such a robotic way. There's plenty of ways to summarize something someone said so that they feel like you actually heard, you actually listened, and you thought about what they said. And then in active listening, the last thing to do is share a response, which is really hard for me because at least, I don't know about you guys, but when I'm in a conversation, I'm one of those people where I accidentally talk over people all the time because I'm so excited to be talking to them about things.
Yeah,
and, and it ends up being one of the, I'm listening. Go ahead. You know, and in certain conversations, that's fine. But if you're trying to make someone feel heard so that then you can also feel heard, probably good to leave the pause, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So active listening, what do you guys think about that?
The struggle is real with active listening. I'm an interrupter, and I realize that's very disrespectful to the person talking, and I have had to bite my tongue in order not to interrupt others, and I've been called out on it before, too.
It's so hard, because I feel like what I have to say makes sense only right then. If I wait, it won't make much sense. So I have to hurry up and pause. You have to hear this. Okay, now go. And then when they start talking again, I'm like, that wasn't necessary. It feels like I'm on fire and I have to say it right now. But then inevitably, once I say it, I'm like, yeah, that was dumb. Sorry. That was not necessary. But in the moment, it felt like that was going to be mind-blowing.
Right.
It never lands like I think it will.
Hilarious. So the next one on our list is one we've kind of talked about a lot, is the feeling-based questions and statements. Chad highlighted this as a way that he navigates conversations. And I think that there's one thing about this that I also really like, besides the fact that it frames the conversation, I feel this way because X, or when we talk about these things, it makes me feel Y. Not only does that place that conversation in a space where the person understands how the conversation is affecting you, and that probably you understand how the conversation is affecting them. But, you know, one of the things in life we also have to think about, right, is boundaries. Mm-hmm. And what we're willing to, how far we are willing to go with people in a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you express yourself in a way that when you talk to me this way, it makes me feel blank. Or when we talk about these people this way, it makes me feel X. Then if that person continues to do those things, that communicates to you in a very clear way their respect of your boundaries, be them conversational or emotional. And that kind of helps us sort through when it's good to sit and have that conversation and maybe when it's better to not have it and then have it again later. If you put it out there that something makes you feel a certain way and then that person kind of doubles down, well, you know, it's a good way for us to remember too that if when we decide to double down, we might be making that person not only feel unheard, but maybe disrespected or unloved.
Yes, definitely.
The next one on the list is intellectual humility. So I had to look this one up, but it was something that one of the people actually who responded to my text message brought up, who's a very smart individual who I who I love dearly and condensed their response so that we could understand it here today.
Yeah, that's a five-syllable word.
Right. I don't explain that one.
Intellectual humility. So the little visual that I was able to pull up for it to help me understand is a virtue between two vices. So there's red, yellow, green, stoplight kind of way to understand this. Mm-hmm. And in this scenario, we want to live in the yellow. And on the red side is intellectual civility. So an over-attentiveness to your own obvious weaknesses or strengths. So this is someone who won't believe themselves because they're so sure that they could be wrong.
Whoa.
And then, so we don't want to live in a place where we always feel like we're probably wrong, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
And then on the complete other end of the spectrum is intellectual arrogance. And this is the person who believes they're so right sometimes that they won't listen to anybody else. Mm. This is, no, I'm right. I don't need to hear this. No, I read about it, so I don't need to read again. Mm-hmm. And then right there in the middle is that sweet spot of intellectual humility, which is realizing that you could be wrong and respecting your own understanding as well. This is the person who's willing to go, I mean, I really don't believe that that's true medically. But for the sake of the argument, let's go with this. And then we can all look it up together later. You know, mm-hmm. So when living our lives, we should all, you know, even though we probably will sway in between those three places, strive to live in the center, which is something that's so important right now. That in my position, I just want to tell everybody in the world is that there's so much misinformation and stuff on the internet. Yes, and on the TV that is like only created to make ad revenue off of you. Mm-hmm. Its only job is to get you to click it or to read it or to watch it so that someone can say someone watched it and they get 5 cents. And the best way to do that is to tell people what they want to hear, whether or not it's true.
I feel like a sucker.
I know.
I'm like, see, I'm not the only one. Same. There's research.
Oh, no. Oh yeah. No. It's totally real. And, you know, anything you click that asks to get to see your information on your Facebook is going straight to somebody who's going to use it for bad. So you don't need to use that quiz. Go to BuzzFeed, do a quiz where they don't need your information. That's my little PSA for the internet and misinformation.
In fact,
everybody knows this, Ashley.
I just want people
just to kidding. And they are looking at each other terrified right now.
Right?
Oh, gosh.
Look, if you need help, I just email Ashley at cmc.com and I can help you undo some stuff you might have done. So the last one on our list is most important. And this is what Stephanie brought to me that I just thought was so fantastic. And she said, we are called to love all people by Christ, not just tolerate or put up with them. Loving entails being in a relationship. And I loved that so much that I started Googling around, finding other people who were talking about this. And I loved this little quip that I read on a blog that says far too many people at the local level believe that 1 John 4:7 reads like this: "Beloved, let us tolerate one another, for tolerance is from God, and whoever tolerates has been born of God and knows God." It doesn't sound quite as good, right? It sounds like you're keeping everybody at arm's length. And everybody out there, we know that that verse reads, "Beloved, let us love one another, for love is from God. And whoever loves has been born of God and knows God." 1 John 4:7. So the hardest pill to swallow, I feel like, in all of this is that regardless of how hard some things are, we're supposed to love and figure out how to do that. And actually, how to be in a relationship.
There's with a people. Really good quote that's been flying around for a couple thousand years. It's like, love everybody, judge nobody. I don't know, somebody really smart said that. I love it. And non-judgmental. Yes. Why does it sound so easy when he says it?
Oh, it sounds so simple. We all know it's a lifelong growth path to figuring out how to love people well.
Right.
And so often when we feel like loving people well is not always telling them what they want to hear. And so we have to find the balance in there, right? Well, ladies, as we start to wrap up, is there anything you want to leave people with? Any thoughts that you feel are lingering? Any last stories?
Well, there's something that struck me when you were talking earlier. I just love this image, and sometimes I get choked up. I took my kids to a Martin Luther King parade once, and we go every year. It's downtown Plano, and we walked in it. And at the end, we ended at a church in a parking lot, and there was a podium, and like the mayor was there and he spoke, and then another guy spoke, and then this pastor gets up, an African-American man, a full head of gray hair. He's just seen a lot of life. He was probably born in the 40s, and he's just been through a lot, and he's seen a lot and had stories in his family that we will never have to live through. And he got up and looked at the crowd and started crying. And he said, "This is what heaven is. It's all races, all genders. Everybody looks different. Nobody cares where you come from. Nobody cares how you feel. It's just love. We're all just here for one loving reason today." And I just look out and it's just like every color of human is standing here staring at me. This is actually heaven. This is what it's going to be like. And then suddenly there are 200 people sobbing and all the kids were like, "Am I supposed to be sad?" I didn't realize, you know, because kids are so simple. You cry when you're sad and you laugh when you're happy. And like, you know, the kids were all kind of panicking, hanging on to their parents, you know, because there are these big grown men, you know, trying to hold it together and veterans and, you know, these tough looking people like really losing it. And it was just like one whole minute of just kind of silence and looking around. And it was a really cool, special moment of just in the end, what really matters? Relationships matter. Politics don't matter. You know, the face mask debate and licking the handrails, like it's important. But in the end, you know, is that what you're going to be thinking about when you're dying? If you knew you had 5 minutes left, are you going to worry about that? You know, there are certain people you'd call and certain conversations you'd have. And those things just wouldn't come up. You know, it just doesn't matter. It feels good in the moment to deliver some zingers in a good conversation and feel like you got your way or you were heard. But really in the end, you know, you're not going to remember that stuff. It doesn't matter.
We are all children of God.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's what we stand on, right? At the end of all of this, try your best and remember everybody's child of God, regardless of whatever, just like Stephanie said.
Preach.
Well, ladies, thank you so much for sharing your time with me and talking about, I liked how you said this, Lisa, crunchy subjects. And I'm just so glad that we got to share this really good conversation together. Made me feel like I'm not alone. And for those of you out there listening who might want to ask a follow-up question or share your own story about disagreeing, you can email me, ashley@cumc.com, and I'll either get you an answer or send you a response. But thank you, ladies, for being here with me today.
Thank you, Ashley. You're crushing the podcast game.
Yay. Thank you.
I love you guys. And I hope all of you out there remember to take it just one day at a time, to lean on God every time you can, and show yourself a little love and grace too. We love you. Talk to you soon.